And welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a daily program here, a daily podcast where we address issues from a biblical perspective, a Christian perspective. And we're dealing with a big one this week, really, the sexuality that pervades our culture. I'm Pastor Steve Andrelonis. I am a pastor here with Greater Grace Church in Baltimore. With me is Pastor Ronaldo Brown, also one of the pastors that serves here in Baltimore and the area. Pastor Ronaldo serves in Owings Mills. I'm on the other end of the other end of the compass. I serve in Dundalk, but we also serve here at the main campus in Baltimore. And just to remind you, this is a weekend. And so Sunday we'll have church services here at 9, 11, and 6:30. So if you're looking for a place of fellowship, 6025 Moravia Park Drive is a place for you to come and enjoy a message from the Word of God, some great singing, and fellowship. So we invite you to be a part of that right up front here. But we are going to address how a Christian stands in the face of the prevailing winds of culture. And we know that the culture is, we seem to think that the sexuality of our culture is something new and, I was going to say new and improved, but improved isn't the right word to use, but is something new. It's not, but when we read about what the early Christians faced in the Roman and the Greek culture, we're not, those things, the things that are happening today were a part of the culture at that time. And So the Bible gives us a way to address the overheated sexuality. And I do emphasize that the overheated sexuality that we see in our culture. And Pastor?
It's true. It's what's interesting is the first century church dealt with perhaps more pervasive sexuality than we dealt with. It was commonplace. It was normal. I mean, the bathhouse was a sex house.
Exactly.
So it was part of life, but they had less doctrine to use. They were less prepared for it doctrinally than we are.
Yeah.
So we're actually more prepared doctrinally than the first century Christian. We have much more experience and wisdom than we had back then, and maybe perhaps familiar. But we shouldn't be shocked, because truth is not new, but evil's not new either.
No,
evil's
not at all.
So I think I've got to kind of like pull up our socks and recognize, to be surprised in the sense that in the creativity, perhaps the levels of accessibility, perhaps the introduction overtly and covertly, perhaps. I remember growing up in the 70s, you were worried about listening to demon spirits by playing albums backwards and hearing demons. I mean, we've grown way beyond that. Now it's overtly in our media. It's overtly in our television. It's overtly in our movies. It's overtly in our fashion. It's overtly in our every aspect of society. It's been dipped in that. And it's presenting this normalcy. And that is the thing that is dangerous for us as the Christian church. The normalcy of this sexuality, it dulls the senses. At first it's shocking, then it's unusual, and then it's acceptable, and then it's tolerated, and then it's almost like required.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have that without having this. I mean, I can remember growing up, they used to have these billboards in front of the church. It was one of the main advertisements for a church when you drove by. It would be a verse. Now something concerning sexuality is mentioned on the billboard. We are this kind of sexuality friendly. We are this. So now, even at the very front of the church, it becomes the topic of conversation. Like, okay, which church I'm going to choose is based upon my views on sexuality. Never in the history of the church has someone's sexual viewpoints and issues been like a precursor to whether I go to your church. So in that respect, I could say it's shocking, but I'm not surprised in the sense that evil is new. This kind of normalcy, this cultural sexualization, has been there since the beginning of the church. I mean, you look at the sexuality that was experienced in Ephesus, for instance. Crazy sexualized. Rome, the Roman Empire in general, even some of the non-Roman cultures that existed, the Greek culture, tremendously sexualized at every level, literally every level.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we look at Corinthians. We know that Paul is dealing with a sexual issue. A man is taking his stepmother.
Yes.
And this is like he's saying, like, this doesn't even happen in the pagan culture. It's like there's, you know, so this is not something that the scriptures, the early church people, the early church leaders, Paul, the apostles, all of these things were active. You know, they were active. This sure. kind of sexuality, the casualness of it, and the nature of it. So, you know, I think I remember in being at a seminar in London one time, and we were talking about it. And you know, it was actually a marriage seminar, and you know, we were talking. The way that we phrased it is like, you know, there is like you can't just treat sex as something small because God created it. It's a part of his divine institution. It's in the first couple of chapters of Genesis. He said the man and woman were to come together. He said they were to be one flesh. He said they were to be fruitful and multiply. So we can't dismiss it as something sure. that is not divinely oriented to his purpose for earth and for the world. Mm-hmm. So sex is an important element in the plan of God. But to dismiss it and to make it really small and make it just like a casual appetite that you satisfy as you go on, it's just like, you know, it is wrong too. And the joke that I made was like, I mean, you know, you have a great secret agent, 007, James Bond. How many children should James Bond have given the number of movies and how many women he has wow. been with? Okay. It's like, it's just like, you know, he's just like, he's fighting evil or whatever. He's saving the British Empire, but along the way he's got, you know, 4, 5, 6, or 7, you know, dalliances that happen in the course of one movie. Mm-hmm. And like, and we don't know any of the any of the consequences of those relationships, right? We never meet Junior James. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, do we? We know. And so everyone, like, that was like, you know, that just like set the tone for everything. It's like, so do you see, I think that's the thing in our culture. It's, you know, it you know, it's really happened, you know, slowly. And, you know, rather than being like in a pagan culture where there was temples and sexual, rituals were a part of those temples. Now it just like, it's, you know, we watch things that really, you know, show sexuality as something like, just like, you know, just like I said, we talked before, like going to the drive through at the restaurant. It's like, just, you know, pick it up as you go along. And then it's way bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't make it small like that. I'm sorry. We can't make it small as a Snickers bar.
Okay. I agree with you in the sense that I like the way you say it's the casualness of it.
Yeah, the casualness of that in the general culture.
And that is actually borrowing from the first century.
Yeah.
The sexuality that was in the first century was casual. It was normalized. And the challenge that Paul had and Peter had and the apostles had when they addressed this in the church was that what was normal in the world was not normal in the church. They made it unnormal. They made it unusual. They made it unacceptable. And the first way you make it unacceptable is defining the difference.
Defining the difference.
And I think that's the challenge. I've got to guard my heart that what's good in the world is not always good in my life. Mm. And we say, well, that thing right there is not sin or that's not bad, but I've got to be careful that I'm not introducing the world's culture into the culture of my house, into the culture of my family. Because the Bible says everything that is important concerning sexuality in the life of a church, in the life of a marriage, in the life of a believer. Like, for instance, God creates and defines gender. God creates and defines marriage, and he calls it when a man and a woman are together. That's what God says. That's not what our particular denomination feels is right. That's not what we are accepting and embracing. You can put all the LGBTQ things on the side of your church, but God said it's a man and a woman. So if God said it's a man and a woman, what God says stands. It's a God-made union as a man and a woman. You may make your own unions, but don't put God's name on it because he doesn't say it that way. And there's no verse you can twist to do that. Secondly, God does not take sex and make it an identity. God makes sex an option. He makes it an action. God makes sexuality an action. an action that is part of a healthy relationship with God according to God's parameters. He doesn't say it's an identity. And what has happened with the perversion culturally of sex is that the world has defined sex as an identity.
Mm-hmm.
That my identity, my sexuality is my identity. And God never did that.
Yeah.
From Genesis to Revelation, sex was an act.
Yeah.
Adam knew Eve. Eve did not identify as a woman, and Adam identified as a man. And based on these two identifications, we're gonna copulate. No. It was clearly an action. And then he gave parameters for that behavior. He says, okay. He says it's an action, not an identity. And he says in a marriage, a man and a woman, it's a sexual expression between a man is based inside of a God-made covenant union. That's it. That's where it exists at. That's where it was given. That's the first couple that was given to them. And by the way, sexuality is a gift.
Yes.
It's a gift, and it's also an action, but by no means can you personify it as an identity. So you're defending an identity that's anti-scriptural. So the church cannot support identity except for the identity that's given to you in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That's positional truth. The world cannot, the church cannot endorse identities based upon activities.
Yeah.
Like, cause that doesn't, it's unscriptural. So I think the first thing is I've got to make sure that the world is not defining for me things that God gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And sexuality is something that God gave me. And I'll stop with this. Sexual expression is not the principal function of humanity.
No.
Devotion to Christ is. Sexual expression is not the primary foundation of your identity. Devotion to Christ is.
Mm.
Sexual expression is not the pinnacle of the human experience, no much as you enjoy it. Devotion to Christ is. So part of my response is, it has to start with me and my walk with God. The first part of my response toward a sexualized world is, what does God have to say about sex? Because
mm-hmm.
that governs how I think about it. My thoughts are governed by his thoughts. And then my ways are governed by his ways. So that's where it begins. I think that's where the conversation's got to happen. Yeah. I don't go to the world to learn about sexuality. I go to God to learn about sexuality, and then he defines my world.
Mm, that's, wow. That's, yeah. So we go to God to define who we are.
Yes.
We see our identity. We see our value. And when we see our value, then we recognize that we don't need to add to our value something mm-hmm. like this. And I think, you know, let's look at some of the explanations in Proverbs. Now, Proverbs, Solomon, mm-hmm. Solomon had a, you know, wide range of experiences with women. And he's teaching sons mm-hmm. in this. You know, he's saying in Proverbs 5, delight in the wife of your youth and let her ravish your heart always. So there you see like sort of guardrails. The wife of your youth mm-hmm. is the wife forever. And we see that. And then we also see, you know, another thing, like we see wine as a mocker.
Mm-hmm.
So something like this, when it's treated like just a casual appetite, just like as an appetite to fulfill, it mocks you.
Interesting.
It mocks you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul wrote, you know, be not drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. And, you know, I'm thinking about this, like, yeah, you know, the way that God designed this activity between a man and wife,
mm-hmm.
between a husband and wife, you know, does, you know, is intoxicating. It is like, you know, we read all of Song of Solomon, we see this is a guy out of his mind. He
right.
can't stop, you know, creating imagery from nature about the delight that he has in his, you know, his wife. And then the wife too, principally there throughout that book, principally it's the wife who's responding with the joy
yes.
that she's getting from the relationship of having a man who cares for her. And, she understands that. When we're looking at the culture and we see the culture saying that, you know, when we're seeing a culture that's presenting sex as the whole of your identity.
Yes.
As the whole of your identity. It's creating a poisonous kind of atmosphere for you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know from, let's go back to Proverbs. In Proverbs 30, it says there's those four things mm-hmm. that are too wonderful for man. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a ship in the sea, the way of a snake on the rock. none of those things have like a set path. Like
exactly.
Once the ship goes through, the waves cover where it was. Once you see an eagle in the sky, you don't see it tracing. Mm-hmm. Once a snake goes across the rock, if he goes across the sand, you can follow the slither. But if he goes across the rock, there's no one. And then the last one, it all builds to this, the way of a man with a maid. It's like there's, you know, it's not so simple, right? If it was so simple, then there wouldn't be a lot of counseling going on. The kind of relationships, you know, that people have and this strong attachment mm-hmm. and this strong physical thing that comes together, it's not so easy. And so when people fail at it, mm-hmm. or when they have bad experiences at it, and it's divorced from all of the intimacy that you have in other ways,
right.
Personally, conversationally, whatever else happens in the home, then this opens the door to like a destruction in your person, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's like, it's unique in the catalog of sins than the epistles because of the way it affects you.
Yeah.
There's the law of unintended consequences that kicks in mm-hmm. from that. It's one of the few sins or sin areas or areas in general. Let's just say sin areas because sexuality is not sin. How it's handled is sin.
Yeah.
Can be sin, but it's not sin. And that's something that our early church fathers sometimes were overzealous in to a point where it became sex was sin. And then the world attacked the church because and it kind of led to more sin because the strength of sin is the law. So we nailed it like, oh, sex is sin. And no, it's not.
Yeah.
How it's handled. Once again, going back to the word action and that identity, how the action is handled. Like money is not evil,
no.
But how money is handled can be evil. It can be used in how it's gained, how it's spent, how it's mm-hmm. used. But in this case, this affects us so much differently because it touches our body, touches us. It touches our holy of holies. It touches the core of who I am. Much sin that we do sometimes tends to be a little bit distant from us.
Yeah.
But this one kind of can ravage us from the inside out. And there's also some physiological side effects as well from that. But the thought I was going to say was, I'm a Christian. Let's think this through, Pastor Steele. I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
I'm in an over-sexualized world. Okay. How do I live in it? That's mm-hmm. the challenge, right? Because, I see the way the world is. And who am I going to be in this world? And if I can't answer that question, Pastor Steve, mm-hmm. then the world will answer it for me. And I'll unknowingly introduce that highly sexualized culture into my own personal family culture. And before you know it, I closed the front door and the back door was open. And the back door for today's Christian is movies, television, and media.
Yeah.
Because that's the back door that's open. And that's how it gets into homes and gets into lives. It's through the internet and all these things. It just comes barging in. And you locked the door, but you didn't close the back door. And for many Christians, it snuck into the door. And you could find a Christian house highly sexualized with a lot of things that are covertly sexual. How do we address that? How do I guard? Right.
Yeah.
How do I guard? I would say this thought. I should be Daniel. I could be Lot. I should be Daniel.
Yeah.
But I could be Lot.
Yeah.
Both were righteous and both are in heaven. But I can have my testimony on the earth. More like Lot and less like Daniel, right? Yeah. Remember growing up in Sunday school, dare to be a Daniel. Okay.
Dare to be a Daniel.
Unfortunately, in today's church, there are a whole lot more Lots than there are Daniels. What did Lot do? I was thinking about that earlier. Okay, Lot, Genesis chapter 13, what was his major problem? It wasn't sexuality. His major problem was pride. He chose for himself. Genesis chapter 13, 10, he's fighting with his uncle. He left fellowship with his covering. And by the way, Lot's name means covering, and he left his covering, which is funny. So he left his covering. He chooses the area near Sodom. Uh-huh. He pitches his tent towards Sodom. Next thing you know, 15 years later, after he leaves, he's now working in Sodom, in the gate. He's got authority. His daughters are now engaged or getting ready to marry men from Sodom. You see what happened there is he kept introducing the world into his over-sexualized world into his family. And he's in it and doesn't even see it. It's just part of his everyday living. And before you, and then you can tell the effects, because when the angels come, in 19, when the angels come, 18 and 19, he knows the danger.
Yes.
In other words, I'm a man of God, and I'm living inside of it. I know what's all around me. And so I bring these guys in knowing how bad, and they find out and bang on the door, and his response to the banging is, oh, have my daughters. So evidently some of that over-sexualization in the culture got into him and his family. Number one, he suggested it. Number two, the daughters don't protest. So it's already there. And then later on, in the daughters, you see when they want to propagate the family line, when Lot's wife is dead, asleep with dad, to continue, which was not Jewish culture at all.
No.
That was completely – so they didn't get that from Uncle Abe and the culture that they had, the limited Jewish culture that was. That wasn't there. They borrowed that. And by the way, in that area, that wasn't so common in the other tribes in the area. That was completely a Sodom idea.
Yeah.
So they got that from the culture. Where would they get that idea from? So that's what can happen when you live in an over-sexualized culture. You can be you can have a relationship with God, and there can be an effect in your family that's Lot-like.
Yeah.
Now, Peter called him righteous.
Yeah.
But you can be righteous and make some horrific, unrighteous decisions.
Yeah, he was vexed. That's the King James word. He was vexed. You know, he's vexed by what he was doing. And, you know, but you can be vexed and not protest is what, that's the thing. And I think you're right when you're saying that. Here's the thing that, you know, glory, you know, the beings that came from heaven to look at the city, you know, he recognized this, and it's sort of like, I think it shined a light on his and his family's, you know, tendencies towards being comfortable in the culture. And, you know, so he's trying to protect this. And so the other people, wow, this is something, this is, you know, it's the new thing in town. And so they're coming to, you know, to relate to the new thing in town, to the new guys in town, the way that they relate to everyone else in town. And so, you know, so you're right. It was very difficult to break the chain that had attached itself to the people. And we see that in the mother, the mother turns back, and she turns to a pillar of salt. And then you're right. The only thing the daughters knew, you know, the only thing the daughters knew about how to, you know, save the world was to, you know, sexualize things with their dad.
Wow.
And so, and we get the, you know, these tribes are born, you know, and it's like, you know, it's very interesting. So I think that's one of the points that we need to make. You know, Paul is writing to a society that understood the danger and the diseases that happen because of promiscuity.
Yes.
It's like we seem to think that we know it now because we're a Western culture and we've developed, you know, penicillin and things like that that can take care of some of the diseases that happen with, you know, accelerated sexual encounters. But when we go back to that time frame, we know, why does Paul lumps all sin together.
He does.
But he always like puts the sexual ones towards the beginning, because he knew that like when you give your body to something like that, you are opening yourself up to diseases that can affect your body. And these were not, you know, people understood this. The whole Roman culture understood, you know, these transmitted diseases that came because of the over-sexualization of the culture. And it was, you know, and that was the one thing that sort of made the church stand out as being different. Like, we define sexuality as something, like you said earlier, a gift from God given to a couple to accomplish something of intimacy that when it's done at the right time produces children. And this goes back to the beginning. Be fruitful and multiply. And so when Paul is saying like that, like especially in Romans, he said, men doing with men what is unseemly and receiving into their bodies the right consequence of what they've exposed themselves to. So, you know, this is like Paul is saying, I am speaking as a believer, but I'm also speaking as a person who's interested that society be healthy.
Yeah.
And if, you know, these sexual sins have a consequence that can affect a whole realm of people, you know. And if, you know, so give yourself not to fornication. Why? Because it's a safer way to live. Right? I mean, that's, I mean, this, if you want us to give you something that, you know, what, it's a safer way to live.
Yep.
I mean,
I would say, it's interesting that Lot's family was ravaged, not because he was prone to sexuality.
Yeah.
It was because he was prone to choosing for himself.
Yeah.
And
comfortability.
That's it.
Yeah.
Comfortable. I'm going to choose. I mean, he saw Sodom, it says in Genesis 13, and it looked like the Garden of Eden. Yeah. He'd never been there, but I guess he'd heard. And when he saw Sodom, this was the, I guess we're desert nomad. This was the closest thing to what a Garden of Eden would look like. That's got to be it. And you wouldn't fault him for that choice. That's the thing. It's like some of the choices we make in an over-sexualized culture, we're not making them because we're chasing sex.
Yeah.
But we're chasing situations where I want to have the most fun. I want to have the most enjoyment. He said, I want to have the best place for my family and my situation to prosper and be successful. So maybe I move to a place where all that happens. And so, but I don't understand the consequence on the other side of that benefit. Yeah, where you went, I'm sure there was much more places for you to water your animals than where you were. And you did choose the best in Abraham. But if you remember what Abraham did, Abraham that God chose for him, which goes back to our point about when it comes to sexuality, I've got to let God choose for me. And this is where I'm not comfortable with the culture, but I can be Daniel and I can confront the culture. And that's the segue to Daniel. Okay, I should be like a Daniel. Daniel was, he wasn't burning Jewish flags on all over the wall. He wasn't protesting down the street, but in his own life, he made decisions to live a certain way.
Yeah.
And he left space in those decisions for God to prove himself. Matthew 11:19, wisdom is justified of her children. So he tells the guy who's over him, the steward, he says, give us 10 days for my God to demonstrate to you that our way of living is different. And in some, it's not just different, as you said earlier, to your point, better.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, living like that is better.
They were healthier.
Yeah, they were healthier. They was a visual difference. It wasn't like, okay, maybe God's doing something, but they were different. I'm reminded of a story my mom told me when we were younger. One of her siblings would have these parties, have people over, and there would be alcohol there and other things there. And she didn't go. And she wouldn't bring us either. And they mocked her for it, mocked her a lot for that. Why wouldn't you come? You guys too good for whatever. She said, I don't want my kids around that. And years later, my mother tells a story to me like 30 years later. She says, that same sibling came up to her and says, look at all my kids and look at where they're at right now. And she just rattles off jail, divorce, different things. And then she said, and look at your kids. There's a dramatic difference. And it's strictly because you made decisions to be different that were better for your family. And she was just like lamenting that she wished she had copied that 30, 40 years ago.
Wow.
And it's, and I think it's the same thing here. What Daniel's saying is, okay, I know the culture of Babylon. And by the way, he doesn't ignore the culture of Babylon. We're not saying go into the mountains and make jam and cheese. And we're not saying, we're not being monkish here. But what we are saying is being discerning. Exactly. There are things that are in the culture that I need God's mind for. I need God's mind for. God's got to decide for me. I need that Daniel Abrahamic decision. God's got to decide for me. I cannot be Lot and think that I can judiciously decide what is over-sexualized and what is not. What I got to be careful because I don't know what's good for me. And that's a great challenge to say to yourself in your relationship with God. I don't know what's good for me. Lord, you tell me.
Yeah. I think the one thing you're talking about those things, and I'm thinking like you using the Lot story is a good way to go, because I think we get to a point of where we want to feel accepted.
Yes.
And we don't want people to feel that we are superior to them. We want the acceptance. And that's what Lot was saying. Like, I want the acceptance. Okay. I understand your sexualization. So I'm going to give you my daughters. So that's just like, he didn't want to. Wow. He didn't want to feel, you know, he understood the nature of their culture. He didn't want these beings that he knew were bright and beautiful from heaven. He didn't want them trashed. And so he's like trying to find a middle road. And we get into that. And this is where we are, like, as a church is like, we want to feel accepted by the world. We don't want to feel different. And the fact is that we are different. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is like God has made us different. And I think the thing that the church can present is that people from every place, wherever they come from, can come in and find the love of God in the midst of an assembly.
Yes.
And this is where the church and the pulpits have got to be emphasizing, like, okay, we can emphasize how demonic and destructive this can be, but if we don't give the direct people to the throne of God, mm-hmm. and to the Spirit of God and to the fellowship that can happen in a healthy assembly, mm-hmm. and say, this is a joy, mm-hmm. that is better than this moment of satisfaction, mm-hmm. brief moments of satisfaction that, mm-hmm. you could have physically. If you live in a culture of joy with people that you may never have ever chosen to be with, but sure. God brings you into it. And this, I think, if the church centers on its relationship to God and the acceptability that no matter where we've been or what we do, we are welcome at the throne of grace. That's the emphasis. And if that's felt in a local assembly, then people can come out from that. And I remember reading, one pastor saying he did have someone living as a lesbian. And he did, you know, she was very comfortable in the assembly, and she came and had like a encounter with him. And he said, I want to give you, you know, she was struggling with it because, you know, she was hearing something. He said, I just want you to just, you know, don't do anything physical for the next 30 days and then come back and talk to me. And so she listened to his counsel. And then in those 30 days, she developed, you know, a deeper relationship with the Spirit of God, and mm-hmm. she left that lifestyle behind.
Wow.
It wasn't the, you know, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. The strength of sin in the law
exactly.
didn't deliver her. But when he said, just try this mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and use the time that you would have done this mm-hmm. to be closer to God and see what happens. And it worked. Wow. I'm not saying don't use that as a formula. I'm not naming the person who put that, because I'm just saying that. But I read this in a book, and he said that the woman became, you know, a Bible believer and eventually a wife and a mother. And wow. It all came because he was listening to God about the Spirit of God and the power of the grace of God to be introduced to a life that wanted order and didn't know how to escape the disorder. So when we look at Lot, it's like he wanted to keep the order, and he didn't know what to do.
Mm.
And then when he got in the cave, the daughters felt that they had a mission to the planet, and they didn't know how to fulfill it except this way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Wow. That is an interesting way to say it.
I mean, I think we've
mission to the planet. Okay,
we've interpreted the story of Lot in a whole new way.
You just wrote a new commentary. That's available on Google. You can buy that on Google Play, by the way. There's a word that keeps coming back to my mind throughout the program. It's the word identity.
Uh-huh.
That sexuality is not an identity, but that I have to be careful that it can't become my identity.
Mm-hmm.
But when I understand when I get in my relationship with God, I find my identity. And that's why if someone is in that lifestyle, they're walking in the wrong identity. They join the church and they find God's identity. And when I have God's identity, I'm Daniel, mm-hmm. and I can be in an over-sexualized culture, but because of my identity, that governs my activity, mm-hmm. right? And when I'm Lot, and I don't know that I'm going to have a different identity that's going to govern my activity. Daniel understood who he was. Lot didn't. And I think we, as Christians, if I emphasize and understand my relationship with God and my identity, I have an identity, so I don't have to replace it with activity. But the identity governs my activity. Mm. And people that fall into that can get confused about their identity. So then that becomes their identity. Then you see, you know, the multiplication, the consistency, but just not knowing who I am can definitely affect how I act.
Yeah. So think about who you are, and think about who we are, who personally think about who I am, meditate on that, who I am in Christ, and what that means, for my, you know, my value, because this is, you know, just a simple meditation on John 3 and John 3:16, you know, you are so loved, and whosoever believes, and then if you believe, you call upon the name of the Lord, you're saved, you're hid with Christ in God. These positional truths are so important to the health of our mind and our attitudes, and trying to add, you know, trying to establish an identity based on physical performances just never really works. It's you know, beyond sexuality, it's the root of problems when you have disorders in other areas.
Eating disorders,
because I can never be thin enough. You know, the famous one is Karen Carpenter. She was, you know, she had everything in life, you know, number one hits, you know, all these things, and yet she still could not bring herself to see herself as whole. And where the church has the message of wholeness, you know, you find your wholeness in the salvation that you get in Jesus Christ. And that's, you know, this is the church's mission, to bring people to the sense that God loves them just where they are, come to him, receive him. And you, maybe you stumble out of the gate. You come here, you fall down flat on your face, but the steps of a good man ordered by the Lord, he will show you the way to delight in. And a just man falls seven times and rises up again. Just keep getting up. It's like, you know, just keep getting up and think about, you know, what you are. So that's, I think that's the emphasis, is like Lot knew, you know, it's Peter said, Lot was a righteous man. Okay. We don't see that in the story, but Peter is talking, you know, there's a redemption that happened, or something happened.
Holistically.
So, yeah. So, you know, probably at the Bema seat, Lot won't get so many rewards, but when we're thinking about it, is like, you know, our identity in Christ is, you know, cannot be compromised. We can't be, you know, stripped from that. So that's the meditation that has to be, and that's the healthier kind of mental attitude that you have towards yourself.
And I think that's what happened with the young lady in the story or the book you were reading. It's like, get away from activity. Be in the body of Christ and find your identity. And then your identity will have a dramatic effect on your activity. You know, you find that with a lot of different things with people, it's replacement, you know, there's this, okay, I replace this with that, okay? Love the way the world expresses it, over-sexualized and conditional, to the way God expresses it, which is not divorced from sex, but actually defined. The church has been put into a box where we're divorced from sex, that sex is immoral. No, sex outside of God's boundaries is immoral. Sex is not immoral. So I think we have to, in our mind, we have to be careful that the world does not define how we see certain actions. And that's not just sex. It's a lot of things. The world, the Christianity is no fun because you can't do this and you can't do that. Actually, you can do a lot of things within the frame of God's mind. And the benefit is there because of the person of God and the will of God is there. But it's really about, when you think about sex and the culture, there's a lot of things about the culture. That's a part of the culture. So I've got to be like the famous Pastor Schaller application. Okay, I've got to be the boat in the water, not the fish where the water passes through the fish. And Lot let the water pass through him. Daniel was in the water, but he was the boat, and he was moving through the water, but water wasn't passing in his boat.
That's a good way. That's a good one. I think, you know, it comes down to the idea of integrity.
Okay.
Like, you know, integrity, which is like wholeness. And, you know, sexual integrity is a wholeness that comes from following the biblical revelation that God gives us in this dynamic. And like you're saying, like, you know, Lot took on water in his life. You know, he took on water in his life. And, you know, did it sink him completely? No, but he was bailing, you know, and you're right. There was no integrity there. Yeah. There wasn't an integrity in his identity. And you're right. It began with his looking at that place. And this is going to be easy living. And, you know, we don't really realize that, you know, having a mindset that that recognizes the integrity that we can only have in God. Right.
Awesome. Great thoughts.
Final thoughts?
I would say, like you said, I want to make sure that I am discerning as far as exposure goes, as far as, you know, your family, your choices. Your choices say a lot about what's important to you. Websites, movies, fun. I've got to be careful that I'm not tapping into things that are overly sexualized, because I'm introducing, what I'm doing is I'm making it normal. I'm making it normal. Then it ends up in my humor. It ends up in my words. It becomes part of me. It kind of sneaks up on you. It becomes that lot progression. I look to it. I move to it. I'm in it, and I don't even notice I'm in it. Right? It's kind of like when I was in Uganda, and I was a young girl in the, I think she's like 10. She was in the church, and I had seen her when she was like 6 when she joined the church. Suddenly, she comes to church with makeup on, and I said, "Oh, that's new." She goes, "Yeah, I mean, what can I do, Pastor? I was born and I found it." She said, "I found it." Like, it's, be careful what you find. What is the ambient living you're growing up in? Because what is your background noise will eventually be your frontline belief at some point. And that's what the world has been doing. It's been putting all these different ideas of this whole shift from sexuality being an identity to an activity. Gave it a new life of its own. He's kind of put it in the background, like, accept me for who I am, because this is who I am. That's not, you cannot take activity and make it an identity anymore. It's because I murder, accept me as a murderer. You can't make activity identity. And I think if you're not careful, whatever you surround yourself with, whatever the ambient relationships and ambient noise is around you, that will become your belief system eventually, because what was once optional becomes exceptional, becomes, you'll find yourself defending it.
Exactly.
You know, you'll be standing on the wrong side of history, on the wrong side. When 25 years ago, what was that about? And now you're like, oh, of course, well, they have a right to be who they are. Okay, I 100% agree. I disagree that that's who they are. I would say it's who you want to be. And my faith is not designed to support your preferences, but God's desire and God's decisions about me and other people. They have a right. You have a right to see yourself any way you want to. My question is this. Don't convince me that it's your identity. It's like I don't go put on a police uniform and say I'm a policeman because I want to be a policeman. No, I can't assume identities. Identity is one of the major institutions of God. God decided identity. Did it in Genesis chapter 2 and 3. Right there. It's right there. So I think when it comes to sexuality, I've got to be careful of what's around me, who I surround myself with, because those things that you hear, 1 Corinthians 14:10, all voices have influence in your life. Guard your ears, guard your eye gate, your ear gate, your relationships. You'll be surprised how much they directly impact. If you've got Christians that live an over-sexualized life, it's going to make your life, you're going to invite that in, and you're going to accept that. At some point, Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20, he who seeks wisdom puts himself with wise men, but a companion of fools is soon destroyed. If you put yourself in those kind of over-sexualized situations, it's just a matter of time. You're not going to live with painters and not paint.
Wow. Well, we hope we've given you some things to think about over the next couple of days. But this identity, who are you? You know, you are his. And we hope that you, that's the thing that we're emphasizing, is you belong to him. If you need deliverance from this kind of lifestyle, then you could call here at Greater Grace Church, 410-483-3700. We have counselors that could talk to you about this, direct you in a biblical way. And again, we want to welcome you to our church services, fellowships this Sunday, 9:11 and 6:30. We'd love to see you here. We also have midweek meetings at 7 o'clock. So for Pastor Rinaldo Brown, I'm Pastor Steve Androlonis. For our engineer, Sebastian Palmieri, I want to thank you for being a part of the Grace Hour show. And you can find our show at YouTube and Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify. And we also have a podcast website, gracehour.org. You can listen to this program all over again and other programs that are archived there. Join us next week for a new theme. God bless.